7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 57 of Color of Magic. I am your host, Daquan Watson, and I've got my friend, my pal, my buddy, my sidekick, Brian Allen here with me. How you doing, dude?
Doing pretty good. How about you?
You know, this week's not going too bad. Last week was a bit of a stressor for a lot of reasons, for a lot of people.
We made it through.
Yeah, but it turned out okay. So yeah, we're moving forward this week. Also, before we get too far in, I want to say thank you to our supporters, our fans, our listeners that support us over on Patreon. You can do so by going to patreon.com/colorofmagic. We do have a new patron this week, Adam Hernandez, that many may know as Yo Man 5. Okay. He does a lot of great content. So yeah, if you want to see some good stuff, even for multiple games. He plays a lot of different games too. So check him out online on Twitter. He does do some streaming. So yeah, definitely we want to shout out and support those that support us. Speaking of, if you didn't know, the show has a sponsor, cardsfair.com. And it's a great site to sell things that you have just sitting around. You want to get rid of some magic cards, and you don't want to mess with eBay, or you don't think you'll get very much if you just buy list them to a store, you can sell them through Cardsphere. Matter of fact, I just put 5 orders in the mail yesterday. So those should be probably completed and everything by Friday or Saturday, and I'll have money right in my account. I can drop right into my PayPal. So definitely give them a look if you want to get rid of some stuff, especially now where you're trying to get some money for the holidays. Could be a great time. Go through some stuff you've got sitting around and see if people online want it. But that is cardsphere.com. Oh, so today we're going to step right on in to the soapbox. And the funny thing is, we don't even have... This isn't even like a crazy thing. But I want to start by explaining something to people. Because what happened is I had a situation come up where my wife went to work, you know, Halloween, whatever. They had some candy left over. And the bundle of candy they had a Butterfinger in it. You know, little, whatever, snack size, bite size Butterfinger, whatever, you know, the stuff you have for Halloween bags. And she brings some home because I hadn't had a Butterfinger in close to a decade, right? And let me say first, the reason I haven't is because we have an active boycott in our house against Nestle. And I got to tell a lot of people about this because people didn't know, you know, that Nestle, even as far back as like the early 90s, had a terrible misinformation campaign against what we would call really undereducated and some underprivileged mothers about their formulas that they had for children, for babies. Their CEO has come out and said he believes the idea that water or access to water is a human right is extreme. They've been brought up on different issues as far as child labor in different countries. They have polluted several environments. They have reduced water supplies in places and shipped the water elsewhere. So like just a whole series of stuff. And with my family and friends and we're being involved in environmental and animal trade stuff, obviously it's in our best interest to not support this type of company. So that being said, Nestle owns a lot of things. I mean, everything from like DiGiorno pizzas, to candy, to pet food. You know, so there's a lot of things you have to dodge to not support that type of company. I don't know. They probably have like 100 brands or something under them, probably more than that.
I didn't know about DiGiorno.
Oh, yeah, there's a bunch. Believe me, there's a lot of times we go shopping, you see a sale on something where you're like, whoa, let me double check that just to be sure. And I would say about 30% of the time, it's like, ah, yeah, we can't pick that one up. And a lot of people didn't know that. You know, so I was glad to be able to turn people onto that stuff this past week and just say, like, hey, here are some issues you may not have known about. And also have the discussion about, if you're in a smaller town or city in some of these places that are basically food deserts or whatever, where you don't have quality options that say like a farmer's market or anything else, you go to the store and it's like, well, you know, if you need pet food and 90% of the stuff on the shelf is Purina or whatever is owned by Nestle, well, that's probably what you're going to buy. It's even worse if your pet has a dietary issue or something or whatever, and you don't have those other options. Fortunately, we live in a place where that's not the case, and I don't have that issue. But I can see that from my hometown being so much smaller where that could probably come up. But with all that being said, we had a back and forth discussion. And then in researching while I'm telling people some of the stuff and sharing some links, I came across some information. Because people started talking about the recipe changing within the last 2 years on Butterfinger. And obviously I wouldn't know because I hadn't had a Butterfinger in so long. But Nestle actually sold a large chunk of their U.S. candy division to Ferrero Rocher. You know, the company that makes the little round chocolates or whatever in the little gold wrapper, right? And it's very weird. Like, they retained the rights to, I think, Wonka candies outside of the U.S. and Kit Kat outside of the U.S. Not sure why. Weird business stuff, I'm sure. And then Hershey, I believe, bought Kit Kat rights in the U.S. So, strange. I don't know. Maybe Hershey just bought it because they had nothing else similar to a Kit Kat in their candy library or whatever portfolio. But anyway, what this meant is that a whole bunch of stuff was back in the menu.
Okay.
And my stream the other day, people were excited about. They really wanted to see me like eat this Butterfinger and see if I enjoyed it just the same or if it was different. And I almost turned it into a Butterfinger mukbang. Like, there was about to be Butterfinger blizzards. We were going to go to Sonic and get a Butterfinger shake. I mean, I was going to go ham on it. But then I thought that'd be very wasteful, especially since I stream at night. I don't need to be doing that and filling myself with that kind of junk at, you know, midnight.
Yeah, that'll have consequences and repercussions later.
Yeah, you ain't lying. But it was pretty cool. You know, I ate it. It tasted good. It was different. You know, one of the things I explained to people on my video, which you can go check out my VODs on Twitch. But it was that I think the reason people dislike the new recipe so much. I know y'all came here for candy content, but, you know, here it is. But I think the reason people don't like it as much is because there's a nostalgia factor attached to it where you grow up with a taste in your mind that connects to, I like this. And that taste happens to be crappy American milk chocolate. I mean, I'm just saying, there's no way to describe it. Like, if you've, and I said this on stream, right? If you go to a chocolatier or you go get a higher grade chocolate or you go get Ghirardelli or whatever it is, that's a different taste of chocolate, right? It's just richer, finer. It's just made better. It is what it is. But the reality is the new one's not bad. It does have a different bit of chew to it. You can tell they're using some different materials, but it still tastes good and it's still similar. I won't say it's the same, but it's definitely very similar. And, you know, if you'd have told me, hey, Ferrero wants to make their own brand of knockoff Butterfinger and you gave me that, I'd have been like, yeah, that's a reasonable facsimile. That makes sense. You know, so yeah, I had no problem with it. I thought it was tasty. I ate a whole candy bar after not having one in forever, and I will probably be enjoying more of them. So it's very cool to know that this is a thing. But yeah, anyway, big business thing like that happened, and a fun story to wrap all that up in. But Brian, what did you learn last week?
Well, this is definitely a true Texas story. Apparently, a guy locally got shot by his dog.
Wait, what? Okay, explain.
He was wearing his gun, obviously, like a true good Texan. You know, you never know when gunfights are going to break out at your house. And he picked up his dog. You know, dog goes, hey, let's play. All paws going all wonky and accidentally pulled the trigger on the gun. The guy's okay, thankfully. Thankfully, wasn't deadly or horrible. As they say in news, you know, if a dog bites a man, that's not news. But now if a dog shoots a guy, now we got news.
Just damn. Like, what? Okay. to me, this says the dude didn't understand gun safety. Like, it should have been at least deep enough in a holster or in some way where the trigger isn't exposed or whatever to begin with. But, you know, you kind of reap what you sow, I guess. If you're going to be lazy about it and you have your dog up and about, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta decide, hey, are we playing cowboy or are we playing with the dog? You have to make a decision here.
Well, you ain't lying. Well, I will tell you that your bit of news is definitely better than my bit of news. And mine isn't so much what I'd learned, just something I want to use the segment for to talk about. But Alex Trebek passed, the longtime host of Jeopardy, which I think everybody knew. My first thing is, I think he was like 80 or something.
Yeah, 80.
Which I was thinking, dude, I hope my mind is that sharp and I look that good at 80.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, no jokes. Like, I had no, if somebody would have asked me, I'd have been like, oh, he's probably like 70, 72. You know, I had no idea that he was 80. But
the only reason we know that is because he's been on TV for 30 years.
Well, yeah, that's also true. I mean, well, hell, he's probably been doing Jeopardy for 30 years.
Yeah.
The thing, though, is every story I've heard from people that have competed on the show, people that have interviewed him, you know, have all been positive. Like, he's not ever been one of those people I've heard like, oh, well, behind the scenes, he's this thing, or he was such a prima donna or whatever. You know, it's cool to know that the person that was big on the nerd show, if you want to call it that, was genuinely a good person. You know, you want that to be the case sometimes. And there are some stories that came out that, you know, he wanted to film his last show and then, you know, have a good message for the new host, which I guess they didn't get to do. Though he apparently worked all the way up until a couple weeks ago or something.
Yeah.
So there's apparently still a season that will be coming out with the episodes that he most recently filmed. They haven't named a new host yet, so that's something that's going to be coming. And, man, rough world for whoever's got to replace him. I don't even know. Like, I'm not going to lie to you. That's the type of job I may not even want to accept.
I know. It's just who could, you know? It's unbelievable.
And I don't even know, like, I get it. If you're just trying to get on TV, trying to get in Hollywood, you want to, like, you got to take it, I guess, right? But if I was established in any way, I'm probably just steering clear, because you're going to be compared endlessly. You know, no matter how good you are, it's going to be, well, the show's not the same without Trebek, you know, whatever. Like, no matter what you do, that's going to be a thing. And you just know it. You know, I mean, honestly, think about how long it took for people to get used to Drew Carey on The Price is Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it took people the better part of, like, man, it felt like 6-7 years before people finally just went, you know, he's not that bad, to, he's kind of funny. And now he's just the face people know with Price is Right. But, man, that's got to be a rough time for somebody taking over and having to live with that. Now, again, Drew Carey already established, already had a fan base, so it's probably not as bad for him. You know, but, man, if you don't get somebody that's already got that background, I feel for them. I really do. Those are some big shoes to fill. I mean, we've all spent some amount of time, especially when we were growing up, watching back-to-back, like, Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy, right? So, yeah, this is going to be an interesting time in television. As some of our, you know, we've talked about this before, you know, as we're getting older, some of these hosts and these show creators and these writers and these actors that we've known have been doing this thing for 30, 40, 50 years. And, you know, they're
thinking, how long have Pat and Vanna both been on that show?
Yeah. I mean, you know, and eventually their time's coming and there will either be somebody else or the shows will end. But, you know, it's awesome to see just the love for somebody like that that's going around. There was the great clip that has been going where, I guess it was a show either right after or the following one, where he announced his cancer issues. And in the final Jeopardy, the person just put, "What is we love you, Alex," as the answer. And I remember seeing that and seeing people share that this past week was just like, man, where he was choked up and could barely even like get through to the next person. And I was like, man, it's one of those things like, great that that person did that, because you at least have that moment to share and talk about. But yeah, if you're into game shows or you were a nerd, just, you know, a lot of us wanted to try to get on Jeopardy or whatever. Some of the greatest skits in Saturday Night Live were based around Jeopardy. Like, it's a pop culture thing, and man, it just sucks. See, one of the great ones are gone. So, Brian, this past weekend, we had week two of the MPL and Rival Split, as we call them. No idea why we don't call them like challenges or challenge weekends or something. But anyway, the Rivals and MPL splits, which are doing quite well. People seem excited about them. There's a lot of people watching the streams from the different players. The one thing I will say is some people have tried to say like, oh, well, Wizards thing only drew like, you know, 3,000 viewers or 5,000 viewers or whatever it is. But I have to remind people that you almost have a hard time looking at it and just saying, well, Wizards only drew this many people, because you have two things happening. You have one, all of these competitors, I won't say all of them, but a large percentage of them are streaming to their own communities, which are all, some cases, drawing thousands of their own. And then you also have some people that are doing viewing parties. So they're doing their own normal streams that have a couple hundred people or whatever, and they're just watching it, talking about it with their channel and hanging out, right? So you almost have to say, okay, on any given day, what is the spike in Magic viewership that we're seeing versus a normal Saturday morning during these hours or something? I think that would be the only real way to gauge it, and I haven't remotely attempted to pull those numbers. But that aside, through 2 weeks, we're seeing some of the big names finish near the top, which is awesome because, you know, you have your best of the best and the best are finishing near the top. We've got, you know, Paulo Vitor, who's doing fantastic. You know, PV's crushing it. Gabe Nassif crushing it. You know, these are names that, you know, Reed Duke, you know, he's in the top four or five for the MPL. And you know, it's just hitters all the way down the list. Like, both of these leagues are full of amazing players. You've got LSV, who's crushing it in the Rivals. Like, think about this, right? If you get relegated from the MPL, let's say you're on the bottom. You're this Andrew Caneo, Brian Bronduin, Shota, Li Shi Tan. By the way, you're talking about world champions and Hall of Famers here in the bottom, right? Then you would drop down to a league where you're playing against LSV, Matt Sperling, Stanislav Sivka, you know, whatever. Like, so it's not like you get a reprieve and like, okay, well, I'll just come down, beat up these bums, and make my way back into the MPL. Like, it's a murderer's row, whichever side you're looking at.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. There's no... yeah, as you would expect, there shouldn't be. There's no easy wins to pick up here.
No, not a one. And I think that's what's making coverage so good, is every match, it's top quality play. Every match matters. Every point matters. Like, this is the type of top level Magic, or not even top level Magic, top level gaming that I think you need to have in your sport. Now, with that, I will say we've seen some players, a couple of them complaining on social media that they're not having fun with this. They don't enjoy the stress of it or whatever. And that's kind of led to some polarizing discussions. Because to me, part of it, okay, previous world, if you wanted to be a pro player, you would pick and choose what Grand Prix you wanted to travel to. You would go to a pro tour once every 3-4 months, you know, try to finish well in those. And they were weighted heavier than Grand Prix or whatever. Maybe you played in a national championship or something that was worth a couple of points. And then at the end of the year, you collect enough points and you're good. But the other side of that is a lot of players and some fans also said, well, we should have a more established way for pro players to make a living playing Magic, right? They should have more steady income. And, you know, the list is on and on. But the other part of that is, with that, if somebody has you on contract or they're paying you whatever, like, you're going to have to be active. You're going to have to produce matches and content and entertainment and help promote the brand or whatever. Like, that's why people pay you. So part of me is kind of like, look, I think they're still making like 70K a year or something. And this isn't counting like sponsor money, anything they do online as far as content or whatever. So several of them are probably pulling in. I don't think it'd be wrong to say six figures to play Magic. Because I can tell you, even from the little bit I'm doing, and I don't have near the reach some of these pro players do. You know, I'm not drawing 1,000 people on a stream or like some of them are. It is possible for some of them to make an extra 30 to 50K just in content creation. Between YouTube, Twitch, some sponsorship deals, some affiliated stuff, and tournament winnings, right? Because that's the other thing. If you're playing in these, whatever we're calling the big arena tournaments or whatever, like, you still get that prize money on top of everything else. So there's a good chance several of them are, even if they're not making six figures, let's say they're making 80, 90,000 a year to play Magic.
Well, how many would you say are doing that, though? Like, is it 50%? Is it...
Well, the NPL contracts are guaranteed. Like, so NPL minimum, you've got 24 people making the whatever contracted minimum is. Let me go look up NPL contracts. See what that is right now. The latest thing was... I can't find the total, but there is a floor, because it was originally 75K, and then they made some adjustments because it took out the need to stream as a requirement or whatever, which, you know, totally fine. I didn't have any issue with that. I was totally good with it. Some people didn't like streaming. It wasn't really working out the way everybody kind of wanted or whatever. No problem. I'm good with it. But yeah, let's say even you drop it down to 60,000, because I don't remember what the final number is, and I don't want to overstate things. And then let's say, again, you do a little bit of streaming on your own time. Maybe you have a podcast. You write some articles for a couple places. Let's say you make another 10 to 15K, just casually doing some other content, right? So we'll say 70 to 75,000 for playing Magic. But Magic is now your job. You know what I mean? Like, this is what most competitive players, or athletes for that matter, deal with, right? Every game, every competition, every event is something you're going to be judged on. It's going to be how you get paid. I mean, I think people forget, even in the NFL, you get paid game checks. So if you miss games, or you get fined or whatever, like, you don't get that money, right? Like, you have to be there, be active, be working out, be training to get that next contract, to get that sponsorship endorsement. Granted, you're also talking about millions, so, you know, not necessarily a clean comparison. But when you compare it to other esports where you have these different teams, you know, that have these programs and these houses they're putting people up in or whatever, it's kind of the same thing. Like, these people have regimens and they're participating, and they, for a while, they were traveling, you know, whatever. And there's a lot of that stuff that goes into it as well. But I don't know. I mean, people seem to be liking the coverage. I have also seen pros that are saying, like, hey, even though I'm losing right now, like, I'm still enjoying it. And they're like, I'm still in favor of this. I think this is a good structure. So I think there's more people who like it than dislike it. Now, obviously, some aren't doing well right now and they're a bit discouraged. But, you know, let's look at it for real. Like, this is week 2 of 7. You know, you've got the whole rest of the season. Like, there's a long way to go before we're determining a winner. So even if you're unhappy now, like, who knows? You might crush the next 2 weeks. You might go like 20-4 or something over the next 2 weeks. And now you're sitting just outside of the top 10 or something, or the top 5, you know, depending on what your division is. So I don't know. So far, I think it's neat. I think it's totally worth it. But again, you know, I'm talking from the outside looking in. My livelihood is not connected to participating well in these events. But I think it's good for the game. It's good for content. It's something for Wizards to promote. It's brand building for each of these players. So I think there are more positives than negatives that come out of it. But I don't know. Maybe it's a tough time for some of the people, too, though, when you're talking about just the pandemic in general, maybe there's issue going on with family or whatever at home and you have to be around everybody all day. You know, there's fewer ways to de-stress that you might be used to, especially if you're one of those people, you go out, maybe you do go to a gym and go do climb the rocks or something or do whatever. And you can't really do that in a lot of places still. So that could be making it more difficult. So it's an interesting thing right now. Again, we're only a couple of weeks in. So, we need to address this again around week five and see how people feel going into that the last couple of weeks. But it is interesting to see where we got to as far as competitive Magic. And I think this is a lot closer to where we want to be than it is far away.
That's interesting because, I mean, I asked, you know, on my social media and Lord, it's like I don't think there were three people that responded positively. It was all just, God, this is horrible. We got to fix it.
Oh, that's interesting. What were they complaining about on yours?
The number of people, I guess, that decided, because there was a couple of people that decided, you know, well, I would like to, but I feel like I could make more money than this just streaming and not have to deal with any of the competitive stress. So they felt like, I guess, the time investment wasn't going to be matched by the financial commitment. I guess a lot of it was just preferring the old format. And I guess because I really wasn't covering Magic during the old format, so I can't speak to whether it was. Well, I mean, I've heard people say it was a lot easier to follow before.
You know, see, that's an interesting thing, right? And I think that's the right decision for a lot of people, right? If you think me putting the time in to test and play these events or whatever, and the stress, because some people don't deal with that well, maybe this isn't for you. You know, if you can make good money just going out and streaming, because some people do. Some people draw, you know, 1,000 people per stream, 2,000 people, and they've got, you know, 500 to 1,000 subscribers every month, and like you can make a good bit of chunk of change doing that. Great. You know, I'm not faulting anybody for that. As far as how hard it is to follow, I do believe that was the case until we started getting right into this part of the structure. Because I think this is just cool. People show up. They play every week. It's round robin. Everybody's going to play everybody else. And then we're going to have standings at the end. And that's going to determine who's qualified for what. And then we'll get into the more complicated portion of what we call the Hunger Games of the Pro Magic League, where people get relegated. Then you have I forgot what we're calling the tournament, but the battle portion of people who are possibly going to fall out of the MPL, and the people from Rivals get a chance to climb into the MPL. And then, you know, the tournament happens, everything shakes out the way it'll be. And you know, we also haven't been through a full cycle yet. Now, I do think, again, as far as like qualifying and initially getting into the Rivals League and all that, like that is complicated. That is more complicated than it needs to be. And I will give Wizards credit. They're at least trying to explain it now and saying like, here's how this chart makes sense or whatever. But we probably shouldn't even need to be to that point. But as far as the actual MPL rival situation, I don't know, that feels kind of easy. You watch people play Magic every weekend. And they score points per win. And then at the end, we have determined our breakdown or whatever. But it's interesting, though, like that yours was so much more negative about it than mine was. Like, I've seen so much positive.
I just found the original tweet. It was from July. Let's see. One of the Ricky Hayashi weighed in just saying, big picture would be to value the customers, especially the long-term, who invested years of their life into the game. I see these people leaving the game in droves because he says they feel like they're being treated by a commodity, like commodities, and can be easily replaced.
Yeah, that feels to me like that's kind of going a bit of a different direction, you know, than the MPL itself. Now, that being said, there's a lot of people. Like, here's the thing. I think Wizards has to sell the illusion that you can be a pro player. And I think that's probably the one thing missing from this structure. Now, granted, they've gotten better here recently, like we talked about last week, that they have these different events that are getting invites and people are starting to have more paths to get in, you know, whether they want to play in like these Star City events or they want to play in the CFB events or they want to play in these different leagues or like the VML or whatever, and you can qualify that way, at least get your opportunity, right? So that's becoming a little clearer as the pandemic goes on and the structure kind of, you know, gets some pieces added to it. But I think, just like we talked about previously, right, when League of Legends decided they were going to do their $1 million tournament and anybody could qualify, you just, you know, your team of five with an alternate or whatever, you know, you have to build up rank and then you play in these things. And people were convincing themselves like, okay, cool, me and my buddies, we're going to get together, we're going to try really hard, and we're going to get up there and, you know, we're going to get in this thing. But anybody with any sense knew damn well they didn't have a shot. And the same thing kind of applies to Magic, right? Now, I will say this. Even in the old system, you could get lucky and spike one tournament, right? You could top eight a Grand Prix and get your shot at the Pro Tour. There are endless, countless people who have qualified once, showed up to the Pro Tour, went 0-3 or 0-4 or whatever, and they were done. Never to be on the Pro Tour again. And I've seen some of those people where they stress themselves out because they feel, well, I'm good enough. I know I'm good enough. I got there before. I should be able to get there again. And it just never happens. But there was always the illusion that they could. You know, there's the motivation that, well, you know, I just have to do well in this one tournament. Or if I could just qualify for nationals and do this well or whatever. Like, there was these things you could keep selling yourself. And I think up until here recently, and that's what I'm saying, like a discussion from July, I think, is totally different than a discussion we're having in November. You know, granted, it is COVID and pandemic times. So, you know, time frame is relative. But I think just the structure of things and what's available now has changed a decent bit in those 4 months or 5 months. I don't know. but I think it is interesting, you know, to look at that then and just say, I think the problem is people, there are, and granted, we're also talking about the vocal minority. You know, I've mentioned this before, like the casual player that comes and buys all stuff off the shelf at a Walmart or a Target, or comes into a local store to just buy a booster pack or whatever. Those people have never had a sense of the Pro Tour or pro level Magic. They never have, and they never will, because it doesn't matter to them. All they know is what they see from the event as far as like top decks or stuff that shows up in a website or public other publication or whatever that shows what decks are good or what the pros say about certain cards or whatever. Otherwise, it doesn't have a lot of meaning to them because they don't view themselves that way. They're not putting in time for that. Like, hell, the number of people that play Commander give zero Fs about the pro level stuff. They will never play it. They will never touch a 60-card format. Not their thing. And that's okay, right? There's Magic for everybody different ways. But I think if Wizards figures out a way to just cleanly say, hey, you want a shot at getting into Rivals? Do X, Y, and Z, right? Play these events, qualify these ways, get into these tournaments, you know, try to finish high on the arena ladder, whatever it is, right? And just say, here are your paths. And I think that's what they should be highlighting. Because like I said, once you're in the MPL and we're doing these weekend splits and you're getting your points and you're doing all that, fine. That I think people get. Like, once you're there, I think there's less confusion. But getting there, I think, is the dream you have to sell. Of like, can I find a way that within my life, I can pick and choose one or two events that I can target or one or two paths that I can fit in and make happen? Because not everybody's going to be able to grind the ladder and get into the top 1,200 and spend a couple hours a day to make sure they don't fall out of rank or whatever and eventually play the end of season tournament and qualify. Like, that's just not a thing a lot of people are going to be able to do. But if you're like, okay, well, now you win this big tournament or you play this series of events from this organization or you participate in this thing from this league or whatever, and you start saying, okay, here are other ways that I also enjoy these people, these companies, whatever, and I can still get qualified for the Pro Tour or Players Tour, you know, that we're calling it now, then I think you change that narrative a bit. But right now, we don't have that. But I will say, at least we have it where the things that are happening are interesting and exciting, and we can see those and talk about those, and those are at least keeping people engaged while we're stuck at home needing some magic on the weekends. One of the things, though, I guess, Brian, in your space, which you could probably talk to us better than I can, is do any other leagues kind of exist for other games right now that people may not know about?
You're talking about in terms of, like, is it like pro leagues? Like,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, I guess the biggest one that's going on right now is probably be Overwatch League, where they actually are trying to make it like where, you know, you have a contract, and then, of course, with contract comes, you know, and I think they even have something that's like a morality clause in most of those contracts. So I feel like we're getting there. Call of Duty, I think, has a pretty big league. Of course, the thing about Call of Duty is they put out a new one every year, which I guess that's almost like Magic, where you're going to have to, whatever worked 2 or 3 months ago will get changed on an annual basis. So.
Yeah, so it sounds like, you know, what we have for the NPL isn't that much different than what other esports things are either implementing or trying to implement.
I guess it's the difference. Like, they have a contract where you do get some kind of set. I want to say Overwatch is about 55,000-60,000. And then I think there's also paid benefits with that contract. Like, that's if you don't win a game. Now, obviously, if you don't win games for a year or so, you're not going to be a pro Overwatch player for much longer. But it is a guaranteed contract.
Well, yeah, and that's the same thing for the NPL, right? You make it, you get into the Rivals, which is less money, but you get into Rivals or you get into NPL, both have guaranteed money. But if you don't do well the next year, you may not be getting that free money. So I get it. I don't hate it. Some other Magic-related news. We did have the Arena State of the Game come out this morning as of this recording on Tuesday. We're actually recording a day early, so some of our news that you're used to hearing us talk about maybe an additional day or two down the road is actually not going to happen. We're shooting this a little earlier because I have a project I'm working on tomorrow and Thursday, which would have interfered. I'll be talking about it publicly once it's all done, but I would not be able to record. So anyway, Tuesday, we got our announcement for the State of the Game. And it really was just kind of a big update about Kaladesh, which we sort of knew. But, you know, this is the type of thing, these news blurbs that I don't personally care about, because I don't think you're really surprising anybody doing anything. But for whatever reason, it makes players feel good. You know, that, oh, well, at least Wizards told us about some stuff. I'm like, okay, sure. But it's not changing any of our habits, but I get it. People like knowing this. So Kaladesh Remastered is going to release on Thursday. So by the time you're listening to this, it'll either be live or live very shortly thereafter. They did it like the other remastered sets, where this is actually combining, it looks like, Kaladesh and Aether Revolt. Some cards did not return, which... yeah, it's totally fine. It's stuff like Walking Ballista. The Smuggler's Copter isn't in the set. So a few things like that we already established had a good high chance of being problematic because of the other answers in the cards that existed. So I don't mind that. They did break down some of the events that'll be coming. You know, they told you, hey, you could buy this stuff in the store if you want the Kaladesh basic lands. Those are a thing that you just pick up, and that's pretty cool. So lots of little stuff here that's kind of quality of life stuff that goes with Kaladesh. There's going to be 4 events that they're going to run. A sealed event, traditional draft, a premier draft, and draft challenge that are all going to be, you have 2 of them that'll be on November 12 to 19. There's going to be the premier drafts are going to be open for a month, basically, from November 12 to December 18. And then you're going to have the draft challenge that's going to be open from November 28th to December 1. So that's just 1 weekend on that one. Just tons and tons of stuff here around it. They break down the gold rewards, the prizes that you'll get for these events. Historic Brawl will be open again, it looks like, starting November 20th. So if you like playing Brawl with all your cards on Arena, that's a thing you'll be able to do. And... it'll have a one-time entry fee. You just pay 2,500 gold or 500 gems, And then you can just play until it closes, which the date's in there somewhere. So they did mention mobile again. Not sure why, because they just told us a couple weeks ago that mobile's being postponed until early 2021. But this says, hey, guess what? Mobile's postponed until early 2021. You know, but you just told us about it. Like, if you waited to tell us in this release, I would understand. But yeah, whatever. They told us about it. Great. They're saying, though, they do hope to have an updated timeline come January when Kaldheim releases. So there is at least that. They're like, hey, by the time we release Kaldheim, you should have some news around mobile shortly thereafter. At least they told us a goal. You know, they have a new target. So that's kind of nice. But other than that, yeah, it was just kind of a big update on things around Kaladesh, which sort of makes sense because as far as online goes, that's the updated thing. That's going to be the news. That's what people are going to want to play and hear about. And, you know, there's been some bugs here recently. They're, you know, working on fixing some of those or whatever. But yeah, good news. If you're a historic player, going to be exciting. You get a whole pile of new stuff, some crazy, insane things that we played with from Kaladesh. Don't know if the cards are going to be just as good as they were in Kaladesh, just because we have more things available to us currently in Historic. But, you know, I'm sure somebody's going to test some things and find out one way or the other.
And, you know, are they going to do any kind of, I guess, any, unless it's remastered, I don't know, do we get lore with remastered sets? I don't think we do we?
Nah, it's just what was already there. Then it just comes out. So no big surprise there. At least so far, there hasn't been. One thing, though, Brian, does something like this happening encourage you to play more Historic?
Yeah, I definitely want to, you know, anytime there's some new cards, I want to, you know, try to at least open them, see if I like any of them, see if any of it goes into what I'm currently running.
Okay, that's fair. I'm still playing tons of standard, you know, I'm playing very little historic these days. I don't know if this changes it for me, just because my issue with historic right now is, well, one, the decks are pretty much all removal or try to be ridiculous combo, it feels like. But there's so many just big problematic cards that just feel like, I don't even say problematic, they're just like discouraging cards to even like play against or whatever. And I think that's kind of my problem. It really clamps down on some of your creativity or the options. But I will also say there's a lot of people still enjoying historic. So this could very well just be what people want. And that's just the nature of historic. And it speaks to certain players. And that's okay too. You know, I'm a big fan of there being magic for the masses, right? It's just different ways to play that appeal to different players. So I do not hate that, you know. And people seem excited about some stuff coming out with Kaladesh. So good for them. You know, players will have something to keep them busy through this holiday season. Yeah. Especially since it looks like a lot of places are going to be going on lockdown again soon. So we may be having some more stay-at-home orders because of the unfortunate COVID spikes in a lot of places. So, you know, maybe this is good timing. Maybe this is good for Wizards. You know, people will spend some of their money on Kaladesh since they're not going to be spending it on other things. Next up, one thing I do want to touch on is prices on Commander Legends. And I'm probably going to do a video about this here in the next couple of days. But just, you know, because some people are saying like, hey, is Commander Legends worth it? Should I only buy singles? Should I do whatever? The interesting thing right now is you have, I think by last count, I saw through most sites, 33 cards of rares or mythics that are going for $5 plus. And then there's another chunk that's like in the $4 to $4.50 range, you know, but I just figured like $5 feels like a clear enough mark that if you're buying a $6 or $7 pack, you don't feel too bad opening up at least a $5 rare. Because some of the uncommons are going to carry some value too. But if you open a $5 or better rare, you're not going to feel that beat up about it. And there are a lot of singles that are also well over that. I mean, you've got Mana Drain that's selling for like $50 plus in several spots. You know, Vampiric Tutor that's selling for in the $50 range. You know, several that are in the $20-ish position. So, there's going to be some value to be had. Now, let's be fair. There's a good chance the value of some of these are going to come down. Like, we know that. But it's also, my guess is, going to be lower produced than most standard sets or standard legal sets. So that's going to play a part in this. Also understand that availability is going to be an issue. There's already places talking about they've sold out some of their stuff. Some of them already sold out of their, what do we call it? The special edition, collector's edition already. So that's already becoming a thing that's a problem. So, you know, if that holds up, there's a real good chance that some of these cards, even if they drop over the course of the next 3 or 4 months, in the short term, they may even spike temporarily. As people are like, oh, I want to open more of this, and there's not enough of it.
I guess because I come from so many much more casual, and maybe the fact they're more casual is why they're dead. But it just, you said $50 cards for what's supposed to be a casual format, right?
Yeah. Well, here's the interesting thing, because
cards in competitive, it blows my mind that something for a casual format is $50.
Well, yeah, you know, people still want their cool things. You know, people still want the shiny things. And we're talking about cards. The Jeweled Lotus is way up there. But when you're talking about Vampiric Tutor, Mana Drain, these are cards that are also good in other formats. So if you're playing Vintage or Legacy or whatever, you know, having access to Mana Drain or Vampiric Tutor is reasonably important for some of those decks.
That's true. And I look at it that way. That makes sense.
Yeah, so being able to pick those up means these cards are still going to carry value. You know, think about it. This is the fact that, like, this is a reprint. This is a third, I think, standard, well, third large product printing, I think, on Vampiric Tutor, and will also be the second large reprint on Mana Drain. And they're still carrying these numbers. So that tells you how popular the cards are and how many people want them. And there's a lot of Commander players. Remember, because it's casual, and I think I've mentioned this before, how you'll have Commander players that say, well, I don't want to spend, you know, let's say even $20 on a playset of a $5 card for standard. But that same player will come in the next day and say, oh, do you have this list of cards? And they're all the foil rare versions of whatever it is they want to put in their Commander deck. They will spend $50, $60, $100 for a card that, in their mind, they can have forever. They can always play with it. They're never going to have to replace it. Versus spending even $20 on a thing that may drop value or that they may not use again in a year. So it's really kind of relative to the environment and the customers within that environment. So it's just completely different spending habits, which I find very interesting. But yeah, there is a reality that these cards could spike in the short term, then maybe settle down later if enough product becomes available or if they're ever able to meet demand. I mean, the set was already pushed back. We already have a situation where we already know that shipping issues are a problem. Production issues are a problem. You know, not enough truck drivers for different things and whatever. Like, all these things are still in play. You know, you have some stores that may be under-leveraged or over-leveraged, I guess, as far as their finances. So they may not even be able to buy that much if it were available to them. So you may have some pockets where, you know, a store may only get a couple of cases of it and sell out immediately. So who knows? There's a lot of question marks here, but the set's looking good. If I could say anything, what I would say to people is get with your local store, support your LGSs right now. They can use the money. If they're out, great. Go find your favorite place online or other neighboring store in the next city over or whatever. Get your product. But if you're interested in it and you want more than just a handful of boosters, I would put in your pre-orders now. Like, there's, you know, I try to keep touch with all the local stores here. I already reached out to a couple of them. Went, okay, cool. This store, I'm not even going to bother with because I already know they're going to sell out. I know how much they normally get on stuff. They're already taken care of. They're going to sell out of their thing. Not even going to bother. So I immediately went to one of two other stores and was like, hey, I know your situation. I would like to put in a big pre-order. I want to get a box of Commander Legends. If you have a collector's box available, I would consider getting one. and I want to get the commander decks that come for it. If you're willing to hold that for me, I will come to you and buy it. And they're getting a big ticket sale. But it guarantees I have it, so I can make content with it. I can set them up and sell them on Cardsphere if I want, if I'm not going to play with them, or whatever the situation is. But I did that a week and a half ago to make sure there was going to be some available. So, I mean, the longer you wait, the harder it's going to be to get right now, especially as you start getting people getting close to holidays, telling relatives like, hey, if you're thinking about wanting to get me for Christmas or whatever, I'd like to have this, or I want, you know, some number of packs of this thing or whatever. Like, it's going to be a real issue in some places to get your hands on it. So definitely get your hands on it now, sooner rather than later. Now, the next topic I want to cover, Brian, also kind of ties into new release product. But this feels like it's more your space, and I want to let you speak to it. But, you know, we all know, if you haven't, I don't know how, because you're probably living under a rock, that the new Xbox and the new PlayStation are coming, right? Everybody's putting in pre-orders, starting to see commercials about them. You know, we're all getting banner ads on all of our favorite websites talking about it. So we know they're coming. But does this create a window of time where it's good for people to maybe buy a Switch with one of the special, I don't know, bundles, or getting even an Xbox One or PlayStation 4 if they don't necessarily care about new titles and you still want to stay busy or pick up stuff on the cheap to play a lot of the existing really good titles?
Yeah, because the whole thing about console launches, and I say this every time a new one comes out, is at launch, there's almost nothing to play. And all the reviews I've seen so far confirm we're here again, where there's just not really not any games to say you have to go and buy this thing right now. But yeah, by all means, take your time. If you haven't played PS4, Xbox One, you still might not be able to find a Switch, because Nintendo's crushing it right now. So if you can even still get your hands on a Switch, please do so. Because it's, we talked about this we talked about this earlier. You know, people are always, oh, well, Nintendo doesn't, you know, have the best graphics or that, whatever. Mario Kart's still fun. It's always been fun. Zelda's still fun.
If y'all haven't seen it, and maybe if I remember, I'll include it in the links for the show notes. But the best example I've seen is, for those of you who don't follow, Up Up Down Down is a YouTube channel that's run by WWE superstar Xavier Woods, who goes by his alter ego, Austin Creed, you know, outside of wrestling. But him and another wrestler, Tyler Breeze, who also appears on Up, Up, Down, Down pretty regularly, show a VR. I don't even know. It's not even true VR. Okay, I'm going to describe it to you as best it is to tell you how ridiculous Nintendo has been lately. But imagine having a physical remote control car that you can control with your Switch controller, right? And then you can drive the car around in physical world like you would a remote control car. But what you're seeing is a virtual track that you create using this car initially, with obstacles and everything, as though you're playing Mario Kart on the screen on your controller for your Switch. Insane. and it sounds nuts, but seriously, look it up. Just look up Up, Up, Down, Down, Mario Kart virtual review or whatever. And it's crazy watching them play through that. You know, so there are a ton of things you're still going to be able to do with the Switch, and it's going to cost you like half as much of one of these new Xboxes or PS4s, and you'll probably get, you know, like I said, a bundle where you're getting a game or two or whatever with it.
And by the way, Xbox and PlayStation both have a thing, you know, where if you buy their live service, you're going to get between probably 3 or 4 games a month for, I don't want to say for free because you pay for the service, but it's basically included with the service. You'll get to download these games every month. So yeah, there's really, unless you just have to have the new toy, or, you know, somebody that you shop for has to have the latest thing, there's, you can wait, really. I'd advise you wait, unless, again, you just, or, you know, unless you're a content creator, obviously.
Sure. Another thing I want to ask you, Brian, is like, is this like the sweet spot to see prices dropping on systems? Or is that something that's like, you know, will they drop lower, I guess, with the new release coming out as we get closer to the holidays?
So far, I'm not seeing it. Maybe we'll see some better price drops when we get closer to the holiday, because again, the Switch is still crushing it. So while you're in first place, and I think they'll probably finish the, if not in, I don't know. I mean, they'll probably, you know, Microsoft, Sony will probably make more money because the new consoles are more expensive than the Switch, but pound for pound, Nintendo's still killing it. So the Switch won't see a price drop, I don't think, probably before Christmas. We might see that with the Xbox, the older Xbox and PS4, just because they've kind of been getting their butt kicked by Nintendo anyway.
Fair. Okay, so there's two other quick things I want to touch on before we wrap up the show. The first is I've seen these conversations popping up again, and I feel like, I don't know, almost obligated to talk about this like once every 4 or 5 months now. But not every piece of content is generated to be about competition or about, I don't know, expected value or whatever, right? That's not what everybody's doing. Like, some people are making content just for fun, just for entertainment. Some people, like in my case, I make deck videos and other things that are there just to show people different options in Standard. You know, how I had somebody this past week, or actually just even a couple days ago, that posted like, well, the matchup you showed don't convince me this is a good deck. I'm like, well, fine. Like, I mean, you know, I almost didn't even have a response. I'm like, my goal isn't to prove to you that every deck is good. All I'm doing is showing options that are available that, you know, maybe somebody can at least go 50-50 if they want to play something different in the ladder.
And that's you really it. Can't. You can't determine what your opponent's going to play, obviously.
Oh, well, yeah, that's the other thing, too. You know, somebody's complaining about the draws of my opponents. And I'm like, hey, what do you want me to do? Unless you want me to record like 3 or 4 hours and then have to wade through editing that just to get the absolute nut draws of my opponents and then try to beat them. Like, what, you know, whatever. But like I said, there's content out there of all kinds. And I've told people on my comment section or on my streams, like, hey, I get it. If you want to see a certain thing, here's a person I can recommend, right? If you want to see more top level, whatever, hey, here's a couple of pros that have some good streams, right? If you want to see somebody who just plays Mythic Ladder all the time, hey, I can recommend one or two people. If you want somebody who's just doing draft or limited stuff or just commander content or whatever, right? Or just historic content, right? There are people I will recommend you. And people are like, oh, that's weird. Like, so you're not going to like whatever. I'm like, no, what am I going to try to placate somebody for? Like, that's not being arrogant. That's giving the person the information so they can find somebody that better aligns with the content they want. Because me trying to like, I don't know, apologize or whatever isn't going to do anything because my content's going to be the same tomorrow. It's literally, and then they're still going to be upset, right? So, hey, let me at least point you in the right direction. Because I think that's the other thing too. Let's just be real. Like, there's content for everybody. There's some content that there's a person who produces content that goes by Spice 8 Rack. And he puts a lot of time into his content. Like, a lot. And I've seen some of them, and some of them just don't hit for me. You know, it's like Mr. Bean humor. I get that people like it, just doesn't always hit for me. But when I know somebody is into that type of humor or whatever, and they play Magic, I'm like, hey, here's somebody you might want to check out that you'd enjoy, right? Not for me, but I'm not going to go to his stuff and be like, really? This joke doesn't even make sense. Or why do you, you know, like, whatever. I get it. It's not, I'm not the person for that content, and that's okay.
Funny you bring that up, because I like Rowan Atkinson, and I was talking to a friend, and you know, they're like, I can't get into Mr. Bean, and I asked why, and then they said, well, Brian, you know, I don't have good eyesight. I'm almost legally blind. And I thought about it, like, yeah, almost all his stuff is visual.
Oh, that is a good point. Because a lot of his stuff is basically silent.
Exactly. So yeah, if you don't see well, you're not gonna really enjoy it. Yeah, that's a thing, you know.
Yeah, they said,
explain, like, yeah, you are absolutely right. I understand.
Well, you know, I had somebody who was upset, and they're like, well, you're just playing against people at, you know, Platinum or whatever. And I'm like, well, yeah, because I just didn't make it a goal to get to Mythic. Right? Like, you you know, we've said it before, you can get to Mythic with a losing record.
Yeah.
Like, I've done it more than once because I get to the end of the season and I'm like, cool, let me just spend like 5 hours finishing this off and get into Mythic. When I goofed around at that previous level at Diamond or whatever for like 3 weeks, you know, just playing goofy things and, you know, wasting time on streams or doing projects with my stream where I let them help build decks or whatever. And we just go play the decks in the ladder, whatever it is. Right. But I'm producing fun content for my community. I'm not worried about hitting that top level because it doesn't change anything.
I did that last season and I didn't realize I could do it. Now that I know I can get to Mythic, okay, I have a deck I can pull out. We're like, all right, if I just want to crush people, this is the deck I'm going to play. If I want to try to figure out content or things, I'm going to work with this or just see if, you know, see if I can cook something up.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, right? If I want to make Mythic, I have, I don't know, 5 or 6 different decks that are probably on the arena ladder, like 55% decks or whatever, maybe even 60% decks in some matchups. And I could just do that for a couple of nights and get there if I really wanted to. But that's not the goal for me. Like, I could do it really just to make the videos look better because it'd be like, oh, okay, you're actually playing against Mythic players or whatever and appease those people. But the reality is I would rather take those couple of evenings where I would be ramping up to Mythic and just make my other content. like making that other content has more long-term value to me than getting into Mythic. Yeah,
and I tell people, and this applies to all online games, you got to factor in when you're trying to climb. Factor in when people quit. Factor in how many people, like, especially on Arena, some people, if they don't get the card for their combo, concede immediately.
Yeah, that's true, too. That does affect. There are a lot of variables. It's kind of the same thing when we talk about why Dimir Rogues, you see so many of them, but you don't see them crushing these big tournaments on the weekends, right? People are still playing it in Arena Ladder.
Yeah.
But they're not necessarily playing it as the top played deck. Like, it's fourth, and in some cases now becoming the fifth most registered deck in some of these weekend events. And we've had events where I think the CFB Pro Showdown, I don't think there was one in the top 16. There may not even been one in the top 32. But people are still registering the deck and playing it on Arena, and people get tired of seeing it because it's, you know, every third or fourth match. So that alone tells you kind of the differences there. And again, not saying that, you know, finishing top Arena Ladder doesn't mean something, because once you're into the, like, especially the top 1,000, it's a grind, man. There's some good players still at the top there. Like, that, keeping your rank at the top can be a chore.
Yeah.
But just getting into the percentages in Mythic, we all know a ton of people that have done it. And if they're being honest, they'll tell you they're not a top player. But again, to come back to the original point, not all content is about top end value. You know, and it doesn't matter if it's Magic content or anything else. Like, some people are just doing a fun travel blog, and, well, when they can travel, you know, and just talking about, hey, here's my experience, here's some places I went. It's not about, here's how you can do all this on a budget, and here's how, you know, you can get into this fancy restaurant, you know, that might be overbooked or whatever. That's not their thing, right? They're just saying, hey, I have fun doing this thing and this is how I do it. And they're selling themselves as a personality and people are having fun watching them. You know, hell, Mr. Beast is the exact opposite. He's giving money away, you know, like, or houses or cars or whatever, depending on the video. You know, so it's not always about what can I get out of this? What is the thing? Like, some of it's just, hey, we're having fun. And I tell people, I'm creating a community. I am giving people help with decks. I'm giving people other ways to explore Magic or the game whenever they may be burnt out or whatever, right? That's what I'm doing. That's the value I'm providing. And it's not going to be for everybody. Absolutely aware it's not going to be for everybody. But I'm also not selling it as though it should be for everybody. I'm okay with that. But when I see people having to deal with these comments, and, you know, and I follow other content creators and I see what people are saying on their videos and whatever. When I see this, I'm just like, man, come on, folks. Like, if you don't like the person's content, great. And it's not even like these are complaints like, well, your video was out of focus or this way. Like, this is literally just, well, I would rather it be this way, or I don't know why you're showing this instead of this or whatever. And it's like, because that's not what they do. just go to somebody else's Twitch stream or YouTube video where they do that. And you will be happier and they will be happier. Obviously, when you look through the comments and you see 50 other positive comments, well, yeah, they're doing something right that's pleasing a lot of people. It's obviously not for you, and that's okay.
I once wrote a story, and the person that suggested the story gave me the tip, called, and I thought they were, you know, going to tell me how great it was, and no, they hated it because I didn't use some of the information they gave me, and then they told me that some of the information they gave me was wrong. Well, like, good thing I didn't use it then.
Yeah. People are strange, man. If it's not the way they want or the way that they can leverage it, then it's no good to them.
Yeah.
But anyway, just one of those things I wanted to point out. It popped up again. Just a reminder to our communities. Like, or when you see other people being knuckleheads, point it out to them. Do us content creators a favor if you can, please. Now, this doesn't need to be a crazy in-depth conversation. This is just more of something I want to touch on this week on the dinner table. And I kind of want to open this up to you, Brian, to start here. But we saw the news from Pfizer about vaccines, right? They have, I think they said a 90% success rate on this vaccine, which is great, you know. And they're still saying they still have to get through the last portion of the trials and get approval from the FDA and all that stuff. So it's not like we're going to have this tomorrow. It's still probably, at least I would assume, a minimum of 2 months away before anything can even happen. But how does this make you feel as far as gaming? And how do you think, assuming we do get it where, you know, you can go to Walgreens and get your COVID vaccine or whatever, how is that going to make things different for you or change your perspective on stuff?
You know, everybody, as you said, is talking about the 90% number. The problem, the number that I'm focused on is 70%, because Dr. Fauci says that's how many Americans need to take it for us to get back to some semblance of normal life. And I, as he is concerned, I'm not sure we're going to hit that, because we know how many people out there we have that deny that vaccines are effective.
Man, that's a good point.
Because, you know,
I mean, you're not wrong.
We got a vaccine for measles and whooping cough, and we've still seen outbreaks of those in the past couple of years because people refuse to take the vaccine.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
I'm afraid. I'm afraid we're not going to be. I mean, it's still great news. I'm happy about it. I just hope we can get that message out. But I mean, look how many people are still saying, oh, the coronavirus isn't that bad. Like, you know how many people have died. Oh, you know, it's just, most people are going to be healthy. Okay, I can't even.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Like, I've seen people say, well, why do they only report how many cases people got? And they don't talk about, like, how many people actually die, because it's a really small number. And it's like, dude, like, if you tell me there's 10 million cases and even 2% die, that's still a big old number. You know what I mean? Like, what are you even justifying this as? Right? Like, and here's the thing. I saw this the other day, and I have no idea. I haven't had a chance to corroborate this, so please take this with a grain of salt. But there was a person saying on Twitter, and I've just been really busy these last couple of days. I haven't been able to follow up. But apparently, their child, who I guess contracted COVID and got over it, so it didn't kill them, has lost a couple of teeth because of some vascular thing connected to them having COVID. They're like a 12-year-old, so they've lost an adult tooth or two.
Yeah.
You know, so when we talk about people aren't necessarily dying from it, that doesn't mean we're seeing reports of a lot of people have these long-term issues. Hell, there's some people that still say they can't taste stuff for like 6 months. You know? So.
And we don't even know all the side effects yet. It may be years before we have an accurate catalog of all the side effects.
For sure. So for me, you know, I think it's a case of even when I'm vaccinated, because I'll tell you right now, I'm getting the vaccine.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, question it, whatever, call me a lemming, whatever you want, you know, I'm doing it, whatever. But even with that, I'm probably still going to limit the size of the events I'm going to. You know, I might be comfortable going around like a 20-person F&M or something, a 30-person F&M. I might be okay with that. Not sure I'm immediately rushing off to a Grand Prix, you know, with 800 to 1,000 people or more. I'm probably still going to wear a mask. Because me and my wife talked about this before, right? We should probably just be wearing masks anyway. And especially because one of the things, you know, I've talked to some of my Asian friends and they've said that I guess there are cultural norms overseas where if you are, I get you, like you say, you think you know, you got a little bit of a cough, but you don't really feel sick yet. Like they'll still wear a mask to not spread that to somebody else.
What a concept.
You know, because if it does become something, you don't want to be the one that got like your friend sick or your coworker sick or whatever it is. And I'm like, well, yeah, that makes total sense, right? Like we should probably be doing that. Yeah. And honestly, I think people should think about this, right? How often have, like, there's a lot of people who get sick 2 or 3 times a year, right? But think about now that we've been home, how little people have dealt with that.
For real.
Right. Or you've worn your mask when you've gone to the grocery store or whatever. It's like, well, if we reduce that, maybe you just aren't getting sick as often. You know, you don't have to spend as much on medications or hospital visits or whatever to get your checkup from your doctor or whatever. So even if this vaccine works and we get it quickly. Like, and now I do feel for you because I honestly believe up here in the Pacific Northwest, especially in Western Washington, there will be a very large number of people here that get it. I don't know if that's the same in Texas, honestly.
I don't know how many people in my family are going to get it because that's just.
Yeah. I mean, that's a real thing.
Science deniers that are like in that, not my immediate family, but just in the circle of people that we're around from time to time. How many people think that I've had people in my family say, oh, you won't hear anything about COVID after November 4th because the election will be over. First of all, conservative estimate of how long the election was going to take. Very conservative estimate.
Yeah, I'll say this too, though. What we've already seen, and, you know, to get into politics a little bit, this isn't picking sides, or this is just stating facts, that Biden has already assigned a team of 7, which it's not 8, and I'm wondering if he left a spot for Dr. Fauci once transition happens. Just a thought. But all 7 people of diverse backgrounds, by the way, so good on them, all have the little letters D, R, and a period before their names. And these people are the COVID task force, effectively. And I actually thought, gosh damn, at least we got it right and got a bunch of people who know their crap and are actual doctors to work on this damn thing.
The aliens, the lady talking about aliens and demons didn't make it. She didn't make the cut.
No, she did not make the cut. Right. But really though, this isn't somebody's family members. This isn't a business person. This isn't whatever. This isn't some PR specialist. These are actual physicians and doctors of science and medicine that are helping lead this up. And that, regardless of what side of the fence you're on politically, like you have to appreciate that.
You would think.
And honestly, I would love if that ace spot goes to Dr. Fauci, because when I've looked into him, he is one of the most cited doctors that I've seen, like hundreds of thousands of citations of his work, you know, multiple awards, multiple big projects he's been part of, you know? So yeah, I feel much better at least saying, hey, whatever comes out of this, these people at least know their stuff. They're willing to test things. They're willing to check the research, you know, and I at least feel like, okay, cool. We at least have a group of people that as we roll out this vaccine, we'll hopefully be able to do it in a way that's fast, efficient, and safe for everybody, for as many people that actually want it and we can get closer to making this stuff go away. Or at least, well, it's not going to go away, but at least reduce its level of spread to where it's less of a concern. But yeah, I don't know. I think we're still a ways away. You know, I think I just want to touch on it to say, like, hey, there's a vaccine. Here's kind of how we feel about it getting in back into gaming or whatever. And it's still a ways away. And we can address it again. You know, maybe if we're lucky, you know, come February or March, we'll be talking about maybe we actually got our first vaccine shot or something for COVID. And we can talk about that. But
we'll live stream it. It'll be great content.
I might actually, believe it or not. I think that's a good thing to do, to show people like, hey, I'm doing it. You can do it. But yeah, Brian, let's just tell people where they can find you on social media when you're not on the show.
All right. I am DL Caesar on Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram. Our family channel on YouTube is Alan's Ever After.
And you can find me just about everywhere at Power Dragon, PowerDragn. Streaming 3 nights a week on Twitch. You can find my YouTube channel as well, or just come follow me over on the Twitter. But as usual, whenever you are listening, wherever you are listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. And please, pretty please, even if you think it's dumb and you don't believe in it, do it for the rest of us. Wear your mask, wash your hands, stay away from other humans, and help us get back to gaming and gathering sooner rather than later. If you'd like to further support Color of Magic, you can find us at our website at colorofmtg.com. We also have a Patreon if you'd like to donate, other patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook under Color of Magic. And if you want to follow us along at Twitter, you can find us there at colorofmtg. And as always, please share the podcast around to your friends, your network, people you think might enjoy it, because every little bit helps as we're trying to increase our user base.